Welcome back. My first guest, as always, leading off is my favorite Deacon Jones. Yes, I got an inside tip that Luke has become a deacon in this church. Congratulations, Duke. I think that's awesome. So you're my favorite Deacon Jones. Long slide to number two for the Hall of Famer that used to play for the Rams.
You know what? I would have to say, Dennis, you got to reverse that. I mean, Deacon
No, no,
Jones, one
no,
of
no,
the
no.
all-time greats, but I do
But he was an
appreciate.
all-time great in his field, and you're an all-time great in your field. So there you go.
Well, I'll say this. I would still say Deacon Jones much, much, much better in his field than I am in mine, but I appreciate the sentiment nonetheless. Dennis, how are you, my
I'm
friend?
well, my friend. But again, I digress. You're a real deacon, though, and he was just deacon by name. You're a deacon indeed, and so we'll leave it at that. But lots to unpack this week, Luke, and what is a Super Bowl week should be a very fun matchup. Two teams that deserve to be there. I think they're the two best teams in the NFL, and I think there's a lot of intrigue, lots of storylines, right? No shortage of those.
No question about it. We touched on it a little bit last week, and certainly it's been talked and talked and talked out and talked about some more, but it is a fun matchup. And you have the number one seed from each conference. You have, in my mind, top to bottom, what looked like the best roster in the NFL throughout the season. And maybe the Bills before the injuries really caught up to them and losing Von Miller and a few others. But Philadelphia with the roster that they have top to bottom, but Kansas City has Patrick Mahomes, who's going to be the MVP and is the best quarterback in football. And I don't think it's terribly close in terms of him and then whoever's number two, number three, number four, with no disrespect to that group, which includes Lamar Jackson when he's fully healthy. So you have this matchup of what looks like a better roster, although I wouldn't say it's dramatically slanted towards Philadelphia in that way. I mean, you look at tight end, for example, Travis Kelce's the best tight end in football. Dallas Goedert's really good when he's healthy. But you look at most of the other units on either side of the ball, and you're generally going to give Philadelphia the edge. But is it so dramatic to say then that Kansas City having the edge, with no disrespect to Jalen Hurts, but Patrick Mahomes being the very best, for me, it makes this a really compelling matchup. And I expect a good football game. I think one of the more critical elements is going to be Philadelphia's ability to run the football. And if Kansas City can contain that a little bit, slow it down a little bit. I mean, I think one thing that we talked about a lot about the Bengals as the year went on was their improved ability to run the football. But what they did against Buffalo, they couldn't carry over against Kansas City in the AFC Championship game. And I think that was more one of the more understated points of the difference of that football game. It wasn't the only thing, but it certainly made a difference. So Philadelphia, it's we've talked about it a lot this year, Dennis. They're in some ways similar to what we talked about with the Ravens when they were at their best 2 or 3 years ago, in the sense of if you can slow down that running game, doesn't mean you're going to stop it. I don't think there is any stopping a running game like that in the same way that there hasn't been with the Ravens when they've been at their best. But if you can slow it down and put a little more pressure on Jalen Hurts in that passing game and keep them, get them in some more third and long type situations, that's where you have a little more of a chance. So looking forward to the matchup. If for no other reason, maybe that kickstarts, or maybe not kickstart, but finishes off this Ravens offensive coordinator search, as it's pretty apparent they're waiting until after the Super Bowl to see if they can at least talk to Eric Bieniemy. Maybe they want to talk to Brian Johnson, the Eagles quarterbacks coach. But we've just found ourselves in this holding pattern as it relates to the Ravens with offensive coordinator and certainly waiting. Trying to interpret every social media post, as I saw some fans doing on Wednesday night with Lamar Jackson, what colors he's wearing and holding a book bag and representing, is he getting his bag? Is he signing? I mean, it just speaks to how I don't want to say ridiculous because that means
Yeah.
that implies it's not important, but it does speak to the lengths that we've gone to try to interpret this whole thing. It's where I go back to something happened, please. Offensive coordinator search. Something related to the contract. It's been very, very quiet on the Ravens front, which isn't a bad thing to keep to be clear. But at the very least, it seems like the Ravens brass is going to have their summit with Steve Bisciotti here in the coming days and down in Florida. And not that there necessarily will be any new reported news to come from that, but certainly that's the big kind of sum it to lay out what the offseason plans are going to look like. And in an offseason that feels like it could go in many different directions for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, Luke, that 2019 squad, the Ravens, they could have used the A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and,
yeah,
and perhaps we would have been singing a different tune after that season. They wouldn't have hurt their cause. They certainly would have helped their cause. But with Lamar Jackson, and you and I talked about it before we got on the air, with the quarterback situation being very much unsettled, that certainly doesn't help in terms of recruiting a top-notch coordinator, right? There's no stability there at this point, no guarantee. No saying that I thought about this, no saying that someone really wants to work with Lamar Jackson. There's no saying that somebody really wants to work with an organization that hasn't hit on a wide receiver in years. There's a lot of more question marks than answers, Luke.
Yeah, and I don't think it prevents them from hiring a good offensive coordinator, but it certainly complicates matters. It has to, because any coordinator worth his salt certainly wants to have at least a better idea of what's going to happen with Lamar Jackson than the rest of us outsiders are left to speculate about for the better part of the last 2 years. Even if the Ravens themselves, and I've said all along, I don't think the Ravens have known for sure. I think what they want, what they say publicly, is not necessarily aligned with the reality, as Eric DaCosta has alluded to on a number of occasions, as far as it taking two to tango. Now, again, it doesn't take that long for a deal to come together if both sides truly want to make a deal and compromise, and we'll see what happens. I mean, certainly we're getting closer and closer to that window for the franchise tag, so we'll at least see some movement in regards to that if there's not a deal between now and then. But how could it not complicate the offensive coordinator search? It's why I asked John Harbaugh the question the week that the season ended, and he was respectful in how he answered it, but he dismissed that perception. And I'm not even saying that that has played out. You know, it's been a long search, but as you and I talked about even before we began our conversation here, that there have been these extended, more exhaustive searches, you know, kind of around the league. I mean, certainly the teams that are waiting to hire a head coach haven't hired an offensive coordinator, and teams like the Ravens have, you know, cast a very wide net. I mean, John Harbaugh said they would, and they've certainly followed through with that in terms of talking to a number of people around the NFL, certainly talking to some individuals at the collegiate level. Todd Monken, of course, Todd Monken also experienced as an NFL offensive coordinator, so not exclusively a college guy. And, you know, even the recent report from The Athletic that the Ravens talked to Bobby Engram, who was the OC for Wisconsin this past year, and of course was a Ravens assistant prior to that. So, you know, they've talked to a lot of people, and I think that serves two purposes. One, you certainly don't want to leave any stone unturned in terms of trying to find the right individual. And I've said this to you over and over, Dennis, any of these hires, in the same way that when you're looking to hire new people to join the staff at Coons, you know, there are many right answers in many cases, but you want to make sure you find a right answer. It doesn't have to be the perfect hire, but you want it to be a good hire. You want it to be the right hire. You want it to be someone who's a fit. So I think it's no different when you're talking about this. Of the names that have been talked about, whether we're talking about Monken or Dave Canales from Seattle or Brian Angelicio, you know, from Minnesota, or Eric Bieniemy or Brian Johnson, or, you know, whichever name, Bobby Engram, whoever you want to throw out there. I think, you know, you're casting a wide net. You're talking to individuals who might have a new perspective. Even if it's someone you're not going to hire, they might have some ideas about your offense that you might be able to then apply with whoever the new person's going to be. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, I'm not shocked that it's been a longer search. You know, we talked about this a week or two ago, that this was always going to shape up to be the most exhaustive search they've done since hiring Gary Kubiak back in 2014, because, you know, in the hire since then, they had either gone internally, or the one that wasn't internal was Mark Trestman, and that was not a good fit. You know, that was a case where they jumped the gun, quite frankly, in terms of whether that was going to be a good fit or not. So, you know, I think that's, you know, that's kind of where they are right now with taking their time with this. And at this point, you might as well wait until after the Super Bowl if you feel there are a couple individuals that might be the right hire for you. Or if it comes down to one of these other names that we've talked about, or maybe there's a name we haven't talked about. Keep in mind, Gary Kubiak was not mentioned until extremely late in the process. I mean, in fact, there had been, I think, four finalists, or what were perceived to be the finalists, that were even relayed by John Harbaugh less than a week before they ultimately hired Gary Kubiak. So there are very likely names out there that still haven't seen the light of day from a media standpoint. So, you know, from there, you're trying to be thorough, but I just can't help but believe and think and suspect that, yeah, Lamar Jackson's status is going to complicate things, because you take him out of the equation, it doesn't mean the Ravens are the worst team in the NFL, but it certainly takes them out of that contender status until, you know, you see what's going to happen there in terms of, do you hire or do you sign or acquire a bridge veteran quarterback? Do you draft someone with what you hope would be a top 10 pick in April's draft? So, you know, there's just so many moving parts, and you know, it's tough to really say with any confidence, how it's going to play out until you get a little bit of clarity there. And I would think with this interview process, you know, the first round was via Zoom, via video conference, which makes sense, especially in this day and age post COVID. But the second round then is in person. And I think when you have that in-person type talk, where not just the actual interview, but you know, whether you have dinner, you know, whether you go down to the cafeteria, whether you have a drink, if it's a late night or something along those lines, that's probably where some of these candidates are like, all right, what's going on with Lamar? Is he going to be here? You know, what's going to happen? And that's where probably the Ravens aren't revealing their cards entirely, but that's where they probably, you know, do need to have a little more transparency and be like, look, here's where we are. Here's where Lamar is. Here's our confidence level with whether we can bridge the gap, and or we're planning on most likely he's going to play on the tag, or maybe we are going to trade him if the right deal comes along. So that's where I think with these second interviews, and maybe that's why, to go back to your point, maybe that's why this situation maybe has necessitated having a little bit of a longer hiring process, not just because they want to hire the right guy, but on the flip side, that so-called right guy wants to know exactly what he's getting into here. And that's where, you know, that kind of goes back to what my original question was. Everything about Lamar's status, you know, that complicates everything about this offseason, from hiring, free agents, who you're going to be able to keep in terms of salary cap, because if he's playing on the tag, or if he's just on the tag for part of the offseason until whenever you trade him, all of those different possibilities have a very clear consequence on just about everything you do this offseason. So, you know, that's where kind of brings us back to the original question that we've been asking it over and over and over: what's going on with Lamar? And we continue to wait for some sign of a little more clarity as far as ultimately what's going to happen.
Yeah, and the quicker they put that to bed, Luke, we can all agree, the better. That way everybody moves forward, because although John Harbaugh correctly said this is a very desirable job, however, it also may turn away some of your more desirable candidates, because they may view it, a guy like Brian Johnson over there in Philadelphia, this could be viewed as a career-breaking job just as much as a career-making job, right? So, and he's also in the position as a young guy, that he'll get that opportunity someplace, and winning a Super Bowl perhaps enhances his chances of getting the position he wants, no different than Eric DaCosta staying with the Ravens until he was given an opportunity to become the general manager, right? So you're better people out there. They don't have to jump at this opportunity. They have the luxury of time, because like I said, this could be a career-making job or a career-breaking job, depending on what happens with the Lamar Jackson situation.
Yeah, and again, I'll go back to, it is a very stable organization. It has a really good reputation around the league. So I don't think it makes it impossible, but I think it does. It complicates things. And sure, if you're an up-and-coming position coach like Brian Johnson, and you know, we're just using that as an example. But you know, it's logical to see what the work that he's done along with the rest of that coaching staff in Philadelphia, and what Jalen Hurts, you know, the leap that he took from 2021 to 2022. How can you not look at that and say, boy, that's at least someone we want to talk to, given right, what right. he did
but,
there.
But with, in all with fairness, the quarter- there, Luke, with personnel, let's look at Harry Roseman, the no job doubt. He's done. There was talk, Jalen Hurts, they were on the fence about him before the season started. This was a Pruitt year for him. And again, he became a much better quarterback when they brought A.J. Brown to the team. So Is it the Jimmys and Joes? Is it the X's and O's? It's definitely a combination of both, right? But he became a better quarterbacks coach when AJ Brown came at the scene, and we saw him double and triple covered coming up with those contested catches time and time again, which shows up favorably in the box score for Jalen Hurts and the quarterbacks coach and the offensive coordinator and the head coach.
No question about it. It's all related. It's all
All connected.
important. You know, we can try to rank, and you know, depending on the organization, depending on the team, you might get a different list in terms of rank, the ranking of importance. You know, in the
Sure.
same way that in New
Oh.
England, it was okay. Was it Tom Brady, then Bill Belichick, or was it
Hey,
vice versa? Right? I mean,
give me the horses. Yeah, you and I could have coached Phil Jackson's Bulls, and you know what? We'd play the Wizards or whatever they were called, the Bullets, and maybe we'd have beat them by 27. Maybe we beat them by 23. But the point is, it's the players that make the league what it is. Any team, not to minimize what the coaches do. They certainly can help enhance the outcome and also take away from it. But all things being equal, I do like the players. And for the Ravens, they have a decent offensive line, right? Most guys should return. They can run the ball. They have what looks to be a very solid tight end room. Wide receivers are suspects, so I would think anyone coming in addition to asking about Lamar Jackson, they have to ask Eric DaCosta about what's going on with the wide receiver position now in the future, and historically just hasn't been good.
No question, no question. I mean, and that's part of it. And you just laid it out. You just laid out a very concise assessment of where they are offensively right now. The cupboard's not bare by any stretch of the imagination, but they have a massive question at quarterback, not because of the player himself, but whether the player is going to be here or not. And the business side of that cannot be ignored here. And at wide receiver, you have a very clear concern in terms of the amount of talent. In the case of Rashad Bateman, there's talent, but the questions of availability and just a case of needing to be better there. So, yeah, for any coordinator, again, it doesn't disqualify the Ravens, but it complicates it. It muddies the waters a little bit. And to your point, especially when you're talking about someone who's already in a really good spot, you know, it's one thing to talk about. Like, for example, Justin Outten, the Denver offensive coordinator, you know, under Hackett. I mean, that was a disastrous situation. How much of that was his fault? I mean, he didn't call plays until the last couple games of the season, and their offense was actually a little bit better. So, hey, that was a nice little nod for him. However, he's coming from a situation where he's not going to be back, and Sean Payton's there. And so he's, I don't want to say desperate, but he's not coming from a situation where he's comfortable because. You know, he was displaced, you know, he was replaced. That looking at him compared to someone like a Dave Canales, who's been in was in Seattle for years, you know, has been a Pete Carroll guy for a decade now, or in the case of Brian Johnson, as we've used as kind of our test, you know, our case study here, so to speak. You know, he's in a great spot in Philadelphia right now, and you know, whether it's him getting a job in the next couple of years, you know, moving up the chain, or you know, Philly's offensive coordinator gets a head coaching job in the near future. He steps right into a situation that he's very familiar with. So, you know, that's always part of it. I mean, you're always, you know, Todd Monken. Okay, he's at the collegiate level, and you might say, oh, he probably wants to get back in the NFL. But he's been the offensive coordinator for the two-time defending national champion, so he's getting compensated very handsomely at the college level for an offensive coordinator. So, if you're him, you're not rushing into something unless you absolutely love the situation. So again, all these candidates, in the same way that we talk about the different scenarios for the Ravens, the different outcomes for the Ravens this offseason, all these candidates are at different places. You know, they're different ages, different stages of their career, might be in a really good job right now, or maybe not. Maybe they're unemployed right now. I mean, that's just, you know, that's the way it works. So, you know, it's led to a longer search and not terribly surprising. And again, at this point, you might as well see if you can at least have a conversation with an Eric Bieniemy, have a conversation with Brian Johnson, and they might tell you they're not interested. And you know, after a short amount of time, and that's fine. You know, that's not a knock. It's just the way it works. So, you know, ultimately, you would assume this is winding down because you do want to have your offensive coordinator in place. You know, even if there's the uncertainty remains with Lamar, you can't just wait all off season to hire an OC. So we're going to see that come to a resolution. But as you pointed out, you know, a few minutes ago, there are lots of teams that are still waiting to fill those roles. So, you know, and you don't get the sense that the Ravens have really necessarily missed out on someone that they really had a great chance to hire. Typically, you know, you have a conversation and someone decides to stay put, or you know, they go somewhere else, you know, whatever it might be. It doesn't feel like the Ravens have missed out on you know, their top two or three guys, hypothetically, whoever they might have been.
And the other piece of it is this, Luke. Eric DaCosta acknowledges he's got to get the wide receiver room better. If they sign Lamar Jackson long-term, let's say it goes through, he's going to be up against that salary cap. Five draft picks heading into this year's draft class. Not enough money on a cupboard. So what will they do at the wide receiver position? That's what I keep going back to. They have needs at cornerback. Right, you got to get a corner in there with a high pick, I would think. Wide receiver's got to be up there still. They have some holes.
Yeah, and that's what this is the nature of the beast when you're talking about the fact that whether you sign Lamar or he plays on the tag, the days of Lamar only have costing a couple million dollars on your cap are gone. So
he's not playing on the tag, Luke. I can't see a scenario. I know he's a different cat. I know he played for $23 million. I can't see him setting foot at training camp on the tag. I think I can't see him doing it again. He did it once.
Yeah,
he shouldn't have done it the first time, to be frank with you. He really shouldn't have.
Just to be thorough, I mean, it wasn't the tag. It was the fifth-year option. But your point is well taken.
Again, but yeah. If you and I were his agents, right? I mean, when he went down to the Denver game, I held my breath. I thought, my God, did he tear all three ligaments in his knee? Yeah. Because had he done so, he'd have been done at that point, Luke. So for his own good, if you and I were his agents, right, if it was Colossus and Jones,
right,
he wouldn't have set foot in camp without a contract. Now, if he wanted a guaranteed contract still, probably wouldn't show up at all year long. But my point is, he has to. I just don't see him playing on the tag. I just can't see it.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not suggesting that he will or that's what I expect. But if you know, we're just laying out the different scenarios. It complicates things.
It does.
I mean, you're just it in a position like you said. They don't have, even if they're cutting Calais Campbell and.
Right. Right, Marcus
Chuck
Peters,
Clark.
Everybody. You know,
Gus Edwards. Well, I mean, Marcus Peters is free, but I'm talking about guys that are under contract.
Yeah. No,
you know,
right.
If you're talking about having to prepare, you know, we've talked about exclusive versus non-exclusive. Let's say it's the exclusive tag, and even if you're just using that, you know, with the idea that you're going to entertain some trade offers, but you got to make sure you get the right offer before you trade them, right? So there's still so many moving parts to this, but you know, you're in a position where you only have at this point your projected cap space at the start of the new league year. And this is without re-signing anyone. This is without cutting anyone at this point in time. This is the guys that are currently under contract, which excludes Lamar Jackson. They're at about $28 million of cap space. Yeah. The non-exclusive tag number is at what, $32 million. So you're already over
You're done.
So
you're done.
So
they're in better shape if they tag and trade him in terms of draft capital, keeping the window open, et cetera, right? So they are, but that's the good problem to have when you have a good quarterback, when you have a franchise quarterback. You can't get around that.
Yeah, no question. So, you know, they're going to be in a position where they're going to have to make at least a couple difficult cuts. I love Calais Campbell unless he's taking considerably less than what he's owed. And by the way, he still plays at a high enough level that I'm not saying he's a $1 or $2 million player, but short of him, you know, making a whole lot more than that, I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be really tough. You know, I like Gus Edwards. He's your number two running back. He's making, you know, over $4 million in base salary. J.K. Dobbins is also in a contract year. So logic says you're probably going to draft a running back at some point. And I'm not saying real early, but probably early day three, let's say.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if you're going to do that, does it make the most sense financially to, you know, for Gus Edwards? Now, maybe he takes a pay cut because, you know, he's coming off of having missed parts of the last, you know, the entire 2021 and then part of 2022. So, you know, you go down the list and there's always some, you know, wiggle room that you might be able to figure out with some of these guys. You know, Kevin Zeitler, bigger cap number. Don't expect him to be cut, but can you work out maybe a short-term extension that lowers his cap number? So there are ways to do this, but the point is you're only going to be able to create so much space, right? So short of Lamar Jackson being extended in a more conventional market way that the Ravens would like to extend him. Not as easy to structure it if it has to be fully guaranteed, but you can structure it in a way that his cap number is on the lower side. And yeah, you're still going to have to make a couple cuts, but you can give yourselves a decent amount of cap space. Certainly, if you trade him, then you're kind of, I don't want to say you're entirely starting over, but you kind of are in terms of presumably you're going to draft a rookie, you're going to draft a quarterback. And
yeah. You know, the question is, does he pan out? But that's, I think that's what a lot of fans miss is that.
Oh, sure.
They probably have about a 30% chance of a first round draft pick panning out. You can have, you can get a, you might get a Josh Allen, but you also might get, a Baker Mayfield and that's
or I'm Zach saying, Wilson
or Zach Wilson. There you go. Or Kyle Bowler going back to the day. You're not just starting over. You're getting way behind the eight ball with your organization.
Right. And obviously you can't make decisions out of fear, right? I mean, everything you do has a calculated risk to it in the same way that they could pay Lamar Jackson and the last 2 years could be the tip of the iceberg of injuries starting to catch up with him.
100%.
There's that risk. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but there's always that risk.
But
Dennis
data,
Pitta.
But there's data to suggest that, right? I mean, you can't get around that. And that's the other piece when you're representing yourself that tends to, I would think, get very personal without the presence of an agent sitting there and taking those shots for you.
Sure. No question about it. So, I mean, the prevailing point here is there are lots of tentacles to this, right? There are lots of variables and possibilities and lots of combinations of things that can happen here. So, but all of that, to go back to your original point about wide receiver and mentioning cornerback as well, it's complicated by the fact that, you don't have a whole lot of cap space. Or, I mean, really, you have no cap space. I mean, when you consider, you're not certainly not going to let Lamar Jackson just become a free agent. I mean, that's the Captain Obvious statement. So at the very least, even if you're only giving him the non-exclusive tag, you're already eating up all of your cap space and then some, which requires you to then make some moves and restructure some guys, let a few veterans go, and that's, that's without even making a big splash. So that's where we come back to. It's great to talk about DeAndre Hopkins, but what's it going to cost in terms of trading for him? And he probably is going to want his deal redone. And I wouldn't blame him for that. So
and he's also missed a lot of games the last two seasons, Luke, as well. I mean,
he has, but
he's getting
older. But at the same time, beggars can't be choosers. And I mean, this market, the Ravens have talked about this though. I mean, Eric DaCosta can lament wide receivers being overpaid or overvalued all you want, but the market is the market in the same way that someone comes to you, Dennis, and says, that specific car on your lot is too expensive, but the market dictates what it's going to be.
Well, the funny thing is when I look at that Ohio State wide receiver with a long name, right, I'll learn it before the draft.
Yeah.
But he missed last year, with hamstrings. No, thank you. Give me the guy. I mean, look, Rashad Bateman was injury free in college, I believe, and he's had some bad luck on the pros. But at least don't give me a guy with an injury history in college and draft him at number one for the Ravens. I think it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's tough because we can all point to guys who had injury concerns and then they end up staying relatively healthy. And then you have someone like Rashad Bateman who had never really been hurt at all. You know, he had the sports hernia, groin issue that ultimately he got taken care of then during his first training camp. I mean, that had lingered from college, but that's not something that is a chronic
that is
issue
correct.
Or anything like that.
Yeah, but my point is when you have guys on the draft board, to me, call me crazy, but I would say no thanks. Give me the guy who's never been hurt before. At least let me start with with somebody with no injury history versus somebody that missed an entire season. With lower leg injuries.
Unless it's a case of what the Ravens did with David Ajabo, or you look at someone like George Pickens, who fell a little bit. Keenan Allen, who has been mentioned as a potential cap casualty, and maybe he's someone that the Ravens could at this point explore, depending on what their cap situation is. And again, so much unknown. But
you are on the same page. They need a veteran. They need a veteran, and they need a rookie.
Yeah,
a rookie high in the draft and a proven veteran to supplement. And then you hope that those two, in addition with Bateman, stay healthy for an entire season.
You're hoping for that. And then you're hoping, if you're looking at someone like Devin Duvernay, maybe a different offensive coordinator can untap a little more potential. I mean, that's what you're looking for. I mean, the OC is going to be huge in this. I mean, that's why just about everyone they've talked to has had or has a reputation for being tied to passing game success. And
you saw Mark Andrews' comment about the passing game, but I thought that was pretty telling. And here's a guy who's really been the beneficiary of the balls going in his direction in Greg Roman's offense. But he even said, if you're going to win this league, you got to get the passing game better.
Yeah, no question about it. And as we've said all along, it felt like it was time to move on from Greg Roman. I totally agreed with that situation, with that decision at that point in time. But I'll also say, by no means has it been all on Greg Roman. So that's where 100%. You got to bring in some more talent.
He had some tough luck because the Ravens, at least offensively early in the year, they looked good with Bateman running all over the field and Lamar throwing passes his direction. And of course, the defense started out funky. They had to adjust to McDonald's scheme and vice versa. So they got better, particularly when they added Roquan Smith. Yeah. But that offense was looking good the first 3 or 4 weeks.
It was, and I'll go back to a year ago at this time. We were talking about the fact that the Ravens, and this, keep in mind, this was pre-Marquise Brown trade. They had 2 first-round picks as their starting wide receivers. And as much as 2021 didn't end the way that the Ravens wanted, you could also point to that and say, well, think about it. Bateman was hurt at the beginning of the year, took him some time to get acclimated. Then Lamar's hurt at the end of the year. Marquise Brown was not as productive the second half of the year. And then, we can get into all the different reasons why that might've been the case. But the overall point was you wanted to see what a healthy Lamar Jackson looked like with a full year of Rashad Bateman and Marquise Brown. Now the Ravens traded Marquise Brown then because he wanted out, and that's fine. I mean, we talked about it, but they never replaced him, and that ultimately hurt them. And then they were completely done from a passing game standpoint the moment that Rashad Bateman went down. So, again, I'm not trying to rehash it because we've beaten that to death at this point, but it does again speak to you need to have enough talent. And Mark Andrews made the point at the Super Bowl this week that if you're not able to throw and throw at a high level, and that doesn't mean throw every play, but it means when you do it, you can do it very well, which the Ravens were on their way to doing that back in 2019 and even early in the season this year, as you pointed out. The first 3 weeks of the season, Lamar Jackson had 10 touchdown passes, but they didn't sustain it. So that's the point. But you need to be highly efficient with your passing game. Doesn't mean you have to lead the league. Doesn't mean you have to throw for 300 plus yards a game. But when it comes down to it, when you have to throw the football, when you need to throw the football, when you're in a, whether it's a 2-minute situation or you are down 10 points, as much as that narrative, I think, has been overblown a little bit, because most teams aren't good when they're playing from behind. Now, teams are better than others when they're playing from behind, but no one wants to play from behind. But the overall point, and it's where they never got there with Greg Roman. They were as close as they were in 2019. They were backsliding from that point. That when you have to throw the football, you need to be able to do it. Like when you're in that position where you need to do it, it's got to be there for you. And the Ravens have not been in that position nearly enough. When they've needed to throw the football, more often than not, they've come up short. And the blame goes across the board, and including Lamar Jackson needing to be bigger in certain spots, better in certain spots. But it comes back to how do they get there? Lamar's the first domino, obviously. The most, not even a domino. He's the overall. He's the show, right? I mean, in the same way that Josh Allen is in Buffalo and Patrick Mahomes is in Kansas City and Jalen Hurts is in Philadelphia. But, beyond that, getting an offensive coordinator that can modernize this passing attack, make it much more refined and sophisticated while still hoping that you keep it tied to your running game. Because I don't think anyone, even those like me who've complained a lot about the passing game and talking about it needing to be better, have never said that I want that to mean that they just abandon what they do as a running, as a running team. I want them to be a fantastic play action and RPO team in the way that Philadelphia has been. Mm-hmm. That's what I envision for the Ravens. So, but you want to have that. You want to have this coordinator be able to tie it in to the running game. You don't want to lose that. That's why I like the fact that they're taking a long look at this, because one of the worst, I made mention of this, when they went from Gary Kubiak, who went to Denver. I mean, there's nothing the Ravens did there. That was his dream job. That was the one head coaching job he would actually take, at least according to him at that time. I mean, who knows? But they went from him and that fantastic outside stretch and zone blocking and, you know, that Kubiak Shanahan offense that continues to, you know, Kyle Shanahan has been able to breathe so much new life and principles that his dad and Kubiak used. But you had that, and then you went to Mark Trestman, and that running game completely, you know, Justin Forsett was a 1,000-yard, you know, 1,000-plus-yard rusher in 2014. Wasn't that in 2015? That offensive line was a shell of what it had done the previous year because there's secret sauce involved there. So that's where I say, better get this right because you want to, yeah, you want to be more dynamic from a passing standpoint, but if you lose that magic from a running game standpoint, and look, there's no one better than Greg Roman. And that's not to say that that's me advocating that they should have kept Greg Roman, but you have to at least acknowledge it. There is no one better when it comes to a running game than Greg Roman in this day and age. So your long story short of what I'm trying to convey here, you want to find that proper balance. And that doesn't mean
you also need that capability to come back, Luke. We saw the Ravens blow multiple 10 point leads, right? Double digit leads. But we also seen teams come back from 20 and 27 and 30 points, which is unheard of. But it just goes to show you that the league is evolving, it's changing, it's becoming more and more, in my opinion, an arena football type of league. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it does lend itself to some historic comebacks, and in a league where if you're down by 17 or 20 points heading into the fourth quarter, you still have a chance to pull out a victory.
Yeah, it feels more and more like the NBA in that way, right? I mean,
okay, and I'm okay. Look, I'm fine with it, right? But my point is, the Ravens, as constructed, weren't. We knew that had it gotten in the hole, it would have been very difficult for them to be able to come back. It just down by 10 points for the Ravens just seemed like an insurmountable lead. Down by 7 points seemed like it was a tall mountain to climb.
Yeah, and I mean, Lamar Jackson had come back on a couple occasions in 2021. We can all think back to that Indianapolis game. But yeah, in 2022, they didn't have the horses. I mean, they just didn't. When Bateman went down, I mean, it was just – we talked about it all year. They had number 3, 4, and 5 wide receivers on the field every play. So.
And you and I talked about it in a preseason, right? They never replaced Hollywood Brown. And that you got to have depth because you can't just have one go-to guy at those positions. You need multiple. You look at the and I love what they've done with their tight end room, for instance. You know, they have some quality depth in that room, and they didn't have the same thing at wide receiver. And it's a league. It is a passing league. Yes, you have to run the ball, right? That'll never go away. But you have to be able to be dynamic and explosive. And if you get the ball back, you're down by 7 or with 45 seconds left, you want to feel like you have a shot to move the ball down the field and be able to tie the game again.
No question. And I'm glad you brought up the tight end room because that is another factor. As much as we've talked about the OC, passing game, wide receiver, obviously Lamar, I want to see an offensive coordinator who, as part of that passing game, can build on what Greg Roman did in terms of the tight end. And Mark Andrews is a given here. But what did we see that was frustrating about this offense was, okay, Isaiah Likely was very productive when Mark Andrews wasn't playing. Not so much whenever we talked about the idea of both of them being on the field at the same time. And look, I'm not saying that this is going to become Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez, the football player, talking about the off-field issue.
Perhaps you should have pulled some game film and saw how they utilized McDaniels utilized those guys at the same time.
Yeah. We did not see that their success coincide. It was Mark Andrews getting his, which is great. Hey, you know, for my money, he's the second best tight end in the NFL. But it was him and then very little of Likely, or those games where Andrews didn't play or, you know, either was out or missed time. Then we saw Likely put up numbers. I'd like to see that be a little more complimentary. And that's not to say that they're both going to have 100 receiving yards. You know, we're not going to say that Andrews is going to be, you know, they're going to have 2,000 yard tight ends, but can you do that? Because it goes back to what we said about wide receiver. Look, I agree with you. I'd like to see them get an established veteran that can kind of be, you know, and maybe a best case scenario is it's 1 and 1A with that veteran and a healthy Rashad Bateman. And I'd like to see them draft wide receiver early day three, let's say, at latest. But that's going to be tough to do because of the cap, because of a limited number of draft picks.
Yep.
At the same time, you can only pick the players that are on your board, right? So my overall point is that's what I'm hoping for, but it might only be a veteran wide receiver, and maybe you don't get a wide receiver. You know, you don't draft one until the fifth round, or maybe you trade back.
Rakeem Jarrett and Dante Dimas should be there in the fifth and sixth round.
Sure.
So you right. take a shot at those guys. And also, if they do sign Lamar Jackson, you have to figure with that 22nd pick, it screams to trade back if they have a willing trade partner, right? So hopefully they can pick up that second round pick they gave up for Roquan Smith.
Yeah, I mean, it always depends who's there, right? I mean, if the right cornerback is there, that's your replacement for Marcus Peters, you know, and then you don't have to put quite as much on Brandon Stevens to step into a starting role, then great, you know. So, but you never know, right? I mean, there's always, I even though the Ravens have never said this and I don't know this, I will still go back to on draft night when the Ravens knew that they were going to draft or trade Marquise Brown, I suspect. Whether it was with the 14th pick, because at that point, no one thought Kyle Hamilton was going to still be there, or whether it was with their 25th pick, that they were planning on, in their mind, their assumption was they were going to draft one of the wide receivers, you know, whichever one it was, Garrett, you know, whoever fell to them at 14, let's say. But, you know, that run of Garrett Wilson, Drake London, et cetera, it happened before then. So, you know, that was their calculated risk, I suppose. And, you know, it didn't work out in the same way that it often doesn't work out in the draft, because you don't know, because there are 31 other GMs who aren't going to view players in the same way that you do. So, you know, so it's, you know, you never really know how it's going to play out. But to go back to just finish my thought about the new OC, you don't know if you're going to have that optimal wide receiver room as much as they need to upgrade it. And I think they'll upgrade it, or they'll attempt to upgrade it.
They have to.
You don't know if you're going to get the two optimal types that we're talking about, where is established vet and an earlier than later draft pick. That doesn't mean first round, but you get the point. You know, you get the point I'm trying to make. But that might not come together. So that's where it's like, okay, Isaiah likely flashed the ability to be a little more of a factor as a receiver. Can you do that and have him be more of a factor even when Mark Andrews is also on the field?
Sure.
If you can do that and he gives you a little more of a slot option, or maybe he plays a little on the outside here and there, you know, that can mitigate some of your concern at wide receiver then. So, you know, again, it's spitballing at this point. And that's what the Ravens are going to be doing at their summit, you know, with Steve Bisciotti. I mean, they're scrimmaging every scenario at this point. And clearly they have a much better grasp on where they are with Lamar, whether they've made some progress on a deal, or whether, you know, whether they know right now they're probably going to trade them. I mean, whatever the reality is, you know, they have a better idea than we do right now. So that will factor into every other decision they make. But this is the time where they're laying all that out, because before too long, we're going to be talking about pro days and workouts, and they're going to be focused on the draft. And, oh yeah, we're a little over a month away from the start of free agency. And like we said, Ravens have a lot of tough calls to make as it pertains to their salary cap and, you know, wanting to be in a position where you can at least make a couple modest moves here and there. You know, so, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. But in the meantime, it's left us a lot to talk about with not very much happening in the process, just kind of been in this holding pattern here, waiting to see them make their OC hire and waiting to see what's going to happen with Lamar, at least at the start of the tag window in a couple of weeks, if there is not a deal between now and then, which you never know. I said a few months ago, I was done predicting this. And I really don't know what's going to happen there. I don't know. I don't know if a lot of people in that building have a good idea. Cause I think I'm guessing Eric DaCosta and a couple other high ranking officials and Lamar and his closest inner circle, I don't think anyone else has an idea beyond that. I think it's a lot of educated guessing and conjecture going on with media, and certainly with, you know, fan base, you know, the fan bases of numerous teams that are thinking they could be in the potential Lamar Jackson sweepstakes.
Well, next week, you and I will review the Super Bowl. We'll talk about the 30 for 30 And I'll talk to you about an Andrew Brandt tweet about the general managers and how I thought it pertains to Eric DaCosta. So we'll tease that out. But with that said, Luke, please tell our listeners where they can find you, Baltimore Positive, WNST, your wonderful blog, and everything else that you do on social media.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. I'll be on the seat in Owings Mills whenever the Ravens hire an offensive coordinator, whenever they have some signings or things of that nature, maybe a Lamar Jackson press conference at some point, or maybe not. You know, again, who knows? But check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. My latest 12 Ravens thoughts. Have some spring training preview content coming with the Orioles. Pitchers and catchers report next week. First workouts in Sarasota next week. So definitely still plenty of football, but a little more baseball added to the mix as spring training right around the corner. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive text service sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If there is a significant Ravens roster move, if it is a Lamar Jackson contract signing, if it is a Lamar Jackson trade, any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive text service sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any Ravens offseason press conferences, Orioles content from spring training. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, my friend, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about 1 week from today.
No doubt. Kick back, enjoy our last football game, not counting the USFL and all that, which I'm just not into. But last NFL game of the season should be a good one. And at this time next week, Dennis, perhaps we will be talking about a new Ravens offensive coordinator. You know, it feels like that decision's coming to a head, in the days after the Super Bowl. So time to make a decision and move forward and see who that individual is going to be.
Great stuff as always, Luke. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Dennis. I appreciate you. Talk next week.
All right, my friend. There he goes. The great Luke Jones here on 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.